You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Did you own the MC Hammer parachute pants when you were a young man?
If you don't believe me, I don't even care. I don't need a picture for it. I like the memory.
Giles Barnes has parachute pants, though. I think they're just catching on in Europe. It's a Euro thing.
So that's like reverse buyer's remorse.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
this is 11th, cheated 11th dimension chess right here.
Yeah,
maybe.
Cheated
I'm
a little bit, yep.
That's good radio right there, guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on Sirius XMFT, Channel 85 at MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe, with me, David Goss, and of course, Matt, the armchair analyst. You'll notice, Matt, that I got it in really clearly there, made sure and introduce you. You feel good about that?
Yeah. I mean, I assume that my people talked to your people and straightened everything out after Tuesday's snafu.
They did. My knees.
My knees are
a little sore. They've threatened to make it to cut me off there next time and really beat them with the baseball bat instead of giving me some love taps. We're here. Copa America is almost here.
It starts
on Friday. U.S. Colombia, that's a big deal, guys. And I know that there was MLS on Wednesday night. I know there's MLS on Thursday night. We watched it. We watched the Canadian Championship. I talked a lot of trash about how Toronto FC was going to get just beaten down. It didn't happen. They lost. Well, they didn't lose. Montreal lost. Yes. It was a 4-2 loss. It was just an incredible result. But unfortunately, we're not going to be able to give you that coverage. We just don't have time for it. Copa America, we promised you a huge special, and we're going to give it to you. We have a number of guests here to help us with it. In Group B, Cristela Valencia, our very own Cristela Valencia from Football MLS. We'll talk all about Brazil and Ecuador and Haiti, as well as Peru. Group C, Tom Marshall, ESPN FC's Tom Marshall. He's an expert on Mexico, of course. Uruguay in this group. Help me out here,
Jamaica.
Dave. Jamaica, yes, definitely
the
Jamaica.
Dark horse of the tournament.
Venezuela, correct,
yes.
As well?
Yes.
Yep. And then we're into Group D as well with Dave Martinez of Empire of Soccer. You got Argentina. You've got Chile. You've got, help me out here.
Panama and Bolivia.
Yeah, I knew these. It gets all mixed up. We're in this point before the tournament where you just have so much in your brain that you just can't.
I just want to say we also may be joined by my plumber. So this is an exciting, exciting day.
What sort of insight? Is he pro or con with Jurgen Klinsmann? Where does he stand on that?
Well, he's Mexican, so he's very pro Jurgen Klinsmann. He likes what's happened for the U.S. national team.
If he comes in, we probably should get him on here to ask him what he thinks about El Tri's chances of winning the tournament. We'll definitely ask Tom Marshall about that. That'll come in the second segment. We won't go in perfect order. Look, the fact of the matter is, you probably care the most about the U.S. in Group A, and then probably Group C and Group B and D. While they matter, aren't quite as pertinent just yet. Don't worry, though. We will pay plenty of attention to those down the stretch. Let's talk U.S. guys. Doyle, you had your 11 up on the side. It was a little bit different than maybe some that we've talked about on this show, just a tiny bit. And then we also had a piece from you today where you're basically telling people, hey, that minnow label, that's not the U.S. It hasn't been the U.S. for decades. They come into this tournament with both high expectations within the fan base and some low expectations. People can't really make their mind up. Let's start with your expectations. What do you think? What should we expect? What will happen?
I mean, I expect madness, right? Because it is Jurgen Klinsmann, so you never know what's going to happen. Nobody can predict what he'll do. I mean, we might see a 3-6-1 start off tomorrow's game. You have no idea.
Yeah, could.
But I do think that for the first time in Klinsmann's tenure, we see what looks to me like a number one sort of formation, like he's settled upon something in these last three games and seems to trust it in a way that he hasn't in the past. And that's the 4-3-3. Now, there are some questions within it. Will Michael Bradley play as a defensive midfielder or will he play as a number 10? Because and Klinsmann says, well, it depends upon the opponent. So, okay, fair enough. But at least the formation set, which gives me hope that the tactical roles that he wants players to play are set more or less. And just as important, the starting central defense is Jeff Cameron and John Brooks. It looks like that's it. And with that set as well, we have a chance. We have a chance. If you roll that group out there and say, guys, just sort of figure it out on the fly, if everybody's in their natural position or close enough, then you have a chance. And I like that. I'm optimistic. Guys. Yeah, that's me being optimistic.
The 9:30 p.m. Eastern on Friday is the game time for this one. U.S. Columbia, obviously, they start it all off. They're alone in primetime on Friday night. FS1 is where you can watch it in English. If you want to watch it in Spanish, Univision and UDN have that for you. Of course, all the coverage right here, MLSsoccer.com. You can follow on the MLS app as well. So
it's going to be electric in that arena. It's going to be electric down the right side of Columbia's attack as well.
I'm on the Cuadrado train. You're kind of terrified about Cuadrado.
I think that what they're skilled at, which is taking defenders one-on-one, James Rodriguez floating into space behind the striker, but behind also the U.S. central midfielder, are areas that the U.S. struggles with. They struggle with passing guys off because, like Doyle said, a lot of times guys aren't comfortable in their position. They're also not always comfortable knowing where their teammate's supposed to be. A guy that's the essence of that is Jermaine Jones. Bradley covers a lot of ground as well. James floats into that space very well off the left wing, and Cuadrado can skin most defenders on the planet. In 2014 World Cup, James wasn't a factor in the group stage, and Cuadrado powered this team to win their group, a group that a lot of people thought was going to be pretty tough. That's how good he is on his own, besides the fact that they have a few strikers that can put it away as well. So I think Colombia matches up well.
Wait a minute. Do they have a few, or do they have one guy who's hot?
They have one guy that's hot. So you could take that one. That's definitely true. And a few young guys that Simon Borg's shown me on YouTube videos that I don't know anything about. But
hey, but that techno music was sweet.
That techno music was great.
That beat was driving. Yeah.
Colombia struggles in the central midfield, but I don't think this is a U.S. team that is going to be put out on Friday night that's going to dominate the ball in central midfield. I think there might be players on the U.S. national team that can do that, but I don't think they're going to get the start.
But I actually don't think that that's a terrible thing. And I've spent a lot of time over the last week listening to, you know, in our office we have ongoing conversations all the time. We watch the games together. We talk about it. Twitter is up on my computer screen all day long. People kind of around the games and around the good moments with Pulisic and Nagby, they want him in the lineup. And Nagby more than Pulisic I can see right now.
I think Nagby has to be.
But against Colombia, and we've talked about it,
I don't think you start him.
I actually don't think that I would. Like, I would if I would have got him into the mix a year earlier.
Well, that might be part of it, but I still think I would, because I think he's going to pick up the ball and he's going to attack defenders, and
I want him doing that for the final 30 minutes when Colombia have no idea what's coming.
That might be true, but this is going to be, we just talked about World Cup, so this is in the top, in the front of my mind.
Right.
But 2014 World Cup, you score a goal in the opening minute against Ghana. 2002 World Cup, you hit Portugal early in the mouth. The opening 15 minutes could be a big 15 minutes for the way the group goes, and I'd like to have that skill and energy on the field. I understand your point 100%, Doyle, and then in the next two games.
Of course, the flip side being Colombia punches you in the mouth.
Right. But that's what I think is going to happen, because the U.S.
Regardless,
is going to go out there because I think they're going to go out there slightly defensively.
And, you give them
and
that
I don't think they can defend them.
Right.
Yeah.
You give them the opportunity to do that. Where do the goals come from the U.S. in this tournament, Doyle? Who are going to be the guys we look back at this and say, okay, this guy produced, or maybe this guy didn't produce? Who's that responsibility falling on? Is that Clint Dempsey? I mean, I know that
it's still Clint Dempsey. He was the Golden Boot winner at the Gold Cup last year, and even though he struggled with his league form with the Sounders, he has a history of stepping up big in these tournaments, going way, way back. And I think Clint knows this is his last hurrah, and I think he's going to play like it, and I think that is going to provide a few goals. Look, Bobby Wood just got bought by Hamburg for, what, $5 or $6 million for a reason. Dude can score. And then the other thing is it's going to come from set pieces, especially against Colombia. They are so weak in the air. And we can move forward and put John Brooks and Jeff Cameron and Dempsey and Wood and maybe Jossy Zardes, if he's in there, into the box and make life hell for them on every single restart.
If you're paying attention or reading MLSsoccer.com, our own Diego Pinzon of Football MLS is out there. He talked to the Colombians today. They said, we're not very good on set pieces. We're not very good in the air. We know the Americans are. We really have to watch out here. He is in San Jose. Let's get him on the line now to give us the scouting report. Diego, what's up, man?
I'm good, man. Just here, Santa Clara, enjoying the weather. I know New York is good as well, but California has some room for improvement as well.
Yeah, it does. And you have international soccer there. You have one of the biggest games of the summer, certainly if you're a U.S. national team fan. For those of you who don't know, Diego, our very own Football MLS correspondent here in Santa Clara, he is Colombian, and he's going to give us the full scouting report on the Colombians. So start it off, Diego. I mean, in Colombia, I expect that they think this is going to be an easy game, maybe, or at least one that they should win, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think most of the Colombian media and the Colombian players as well are expecting a win against the U.S. I certainly am expecting one, although it's going to be bittersweet for me as well, because, of course, I want the U.S. to do well. I want the players from MLS to do well. But at the same time, I feel like Colombia is a step ahead the U.S. right now, and mostly because of the prowess they have in their players. I think Pekerman is very competitive and very organized and very thorough head coach compared to Klinsmann, and I think there's a huge advantage in that sense as well. So,
Diego, last year at the Gold Cup or at Copa America, and then at the start of World Cup qualifying, Colombia struggled, especially in attack.
Yes,
but then the last two qualifiers in March, they kind of blew the doors off. They started scoring goals again. What changed?
I think the mentality of the team changed, and I think that's key. That's something that Pekerman has brought to this club, to this team, throughout his four-year tenure now. And he definitely identified that he needed a new generation of players. He knew that Falcao is not going to be there for us, or for Colombia coming Russia. He knew that James needed to be the center of the team, which after the World Cup, that was pretty clear as well. He knew that Teofilo Gutierrez wasn't a reliable forward. So he needed to bring new players, new blood, new players as well that helped out not only in attack, but also defended at the same time. So that's where you see players like Daniel Torres, who pretty much no one knows about, but he's a player who's done very well in the Colombian League and has performed extremely well as well for the national team. We have Sebastian Perez, another player from the local Colombian League, who scored an amazing goal against Ecuador. And those two are very, very competitive players that have a lot of capacity, box-to-box players that can either go on attack and defend well. And that also brought a new mentality to the team. And that definitely improved the way the team has performed recently.
Diego, there's no one else that knows the strengths and weaknesses of these two sides as well as you. How do you see them matching up? How do you see this game playing out?
I feel like the U.S. is going to wait to see what Colombia proposes in the first few minutes of the game. I'm pretty sure Colombia is going to attack most of the time, and the U.S. is going to counter. And the U.S. needs to take advantage of Colombia's biggest weakness, which is the air. They're very bad defending in the air. They've conceded at least in three of the last five qualifying games, they've conceded goals on set pieces, on crosses. They're not really good defending, and they also did it against Haiti this last weekend.
What's the expectation in the stadium, the atmosphere? Is it going to be 50-50 crowd? Is it going to be 90-10? What do you expect?
That's a trickier question as well, because I feel like it's not like the U.S. is playing Mexico where we know everything's going to be green all over. But I feel like a lot of Colombians are coming into this game. Actually, on my flight from New York with a stop in Chicago, a lot of Colombian jerseys in the flight. A few U.S. jerseys as well, but a lot of Colombians too coming to support their team. There's not a lot of Colombians in California, but I'm expecting in Colombians from all over, from Florida, New York, coming into this game. And I would say maybe 50-50, 60-40 perhaps, leaning towards one or the other. I'm not too sure who will pack the stadium, but I think it's going to be huge, especially because it's the Copa opener. It's also their first game in an official tournament with Colombia facing the U.S. again in California after what happened in the 1994 World Cup. So the atmosphere is going to be great.
Diego, where does the U.S., where does Colombia fall in the hierarchy of this group? I think a lot of people look at it and say, Colombia, clear number one. We're not sure what to expect from Costa Rica or Paraguay. Where do you think the U.S. falls in this? Are they, for you, a team that gets through this group and gets into the knockout stages?
I think so, and I think they have to, and they need to have the mentality that they are one of the top teams in this tournament as well. Because I feel like Costa Rica, without Keylor Navas, they lose a lot. They lose definitely one of their stronger players, and not only on the field but also off the field. He's a guy that can lead them when the team is down, and I feel like this generation that we saw in the 2014 World Cup is already faded down a little bit. I'm not sure what to expect from them. Paraguay is still in a rejuvenating process as well as Colombia, but with probably less talented group. With a coach that has never managed a team in a Copa America, that has actually never managed a national team. He did it last Copa America in Chile, but still there's a lot of things that go into this, and I think the U.S. needs to take advantage of all those weaknesses that each team has, and I'm pretty sure they'll get out of the group.
Diego, I think a lot of MLS fans were surprised that FC Dallas winger Fabian Castillo didn't make the cut for Colombia. In your opinion, A, should he have made the cut? Should he be there in this tournament? And B, who took his spot? Who was the guy who beat him out for that attacking spot?
I don't think he should have been here, mainly because he hasn't been consistent enough. And that proved when he went down for the first two qualifiers for Colombia. He was played out of position by Pekerman. That's something else that maybe affected him not being considered for the national team anymore. And I think that hurt him a lot, because not being playing on the wings when he came into this game against Uruguay when Colombia was already down 3-0, and he was playing sort of like a number 10, which is clearly not his best position. So that definitely helped him. He was called into the team more of one of those young players to revitalize the team, to change the mentality. But unfortunately, he wasn't what Pekerman was expecting. And, you know, no fault on Fabian Castillo, because, like I said, he was not comfortable in the position he was playing. And I think the position he feels more comfortable in is the wings, as we know. And there, Colombia has so many players in that area. Juan Cuadrado, Edwin Cardona as well. Even James Rodriguez, who plays sometimes toward leaning to the left. So I wasn't surprised at all of not seeing him in this call up. And you know, it's more of a consistency issue as well, because he hasn't been consistent enough in FC Dallas either.
All right, one more before we let you go and get to work out there, Diego. This is a big game for the U.S. It's a big game for Colombia. What is your prediction here? Who is winning this thing? What's the score?
I'm gonna go with a 2-1 for Colombia. Possibly the U.S. scoring first, probably on a set piece or in a corner kick or something, maybe a header from, you know, Dempsey or whoever. But then Colombia is going to bounce back, and I think we're going to see the prowess of James Rodriguez in this game.
There you have it, 2-1. That's a reversal of that 94 result in the World Cup. That'd be a big result for Colombia. U.S. would have a mountain to climb. Diego Pinzon covering this thing down there. If you're curious about any of that, hit him up, Pinzon Diego on Twitter. Thank you, Diego. Have a good one, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure to be on ETR.
I was actually a little surprised Diego didn't mention Carlos Bacca that much. I mean, he had such a good year for Milan, and he's been red hot for them. Everybody knows James. Everybody knows Cuadrado. But if Colombia's going to light up the U.S. defense, Bacca's the guy who's going to do it.
Yeah, we will give you our predictions in segment 3. In the meantime, we are going to the break. Mexico looms afterwards.
From you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Kyle Beckerman with Real Salt Lake, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. with the guys, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe, David Goss here as well, coming in Ciota Lindo, of course. Mexico is they're the Giants of Group C, no? Uruguay there? Yeah.
No, they're the Giants to me.
You think so?
Yeah, I don't think Uruguay's without Luis Suarez in the group stage, and that's the expectation.
Yeah, they only have Edinson Cavani.
That's it? Only Edison. I mean, look, Edison Cavani, he's a decent player. He's no Bobby Wood.
He's class, but this is a team that doesn't score a lot of goals. Mexico are the class of this group by far. I think Mexico are one of the three favorites in the tournament.
Okay, we will talk to Tom Marshall of ESPNFC about this in just a second. We'll get the full scouting report on Group C. But let's actually start with Jamaica, because you've been kind of not so quietly super pumped about Jamaica and their chances for a while now. I haven't looked at your predictions, but if I had to guess, probably semis, maybe champions. Right?
No,
I wish.
I wish I was that bold of a human being. But I think, like I said, Uruguay plays a low-scoring game. You're always in it. I think the combination of Jamaica's back line, their ability to make things hard in midfield, and Andre Blake being a superhuman combines to the fact that they'll be in games. The question is, can they get the goal?
Right.
It's going to come down to probably two MLS guys in Giles Barnes and Simon Dawkins to make something happen for this team. I don't know that they can. Last year, Giles Barnes did a lot for them in Copa/in Gold Cup.
Yeah.
And if he can do it again, then, yeah, I think they're going to get out of the game.
Giles Barnes is a streaky scorer. He's a streaky player. He goes through months where he does nothing of any real note, and then he goes through months where I'm on this show saying he's the most exciting player in MLS to watch. I mean, there really is feast and famine with him.
Right.
I think they have a chance, for sure. And I think the Luis Suarez thing is big, but the other side of that is that Uruguay has played without Luis Suarez a good bit in high-stakes situations over the last couple of years.
But my thing is, first of all, they're an aging team. They rely on a lot of older players who have been. I mean, Alvaro Rios is like still going to start for them in midfield, and he like bombed out at Chicago Fire 5 years ago, which is fine because he's playing in Mexico, whatever. But Suarez is a world class game changer. He's one of the top five players in the world. Cavani is good, but you lose a player of that ability unless you're Argentina. You can't replace that. Brazil's not going to be able to replace that with Neymar, and I don't think that Uruguay can just say, "Well, we'll get by without the best player." Potentially on the planet.
Mexico wins 1-0 against Chile last night, Wednesday night, correct? Chile looked like they were on something there in the first half, just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. Matt, favorites here? Mexico, can they win this thing? I mean, there's so many people out there, not even as a dark horse, just as a straight-up pick for this team to either win it or be in the final.
Yeah, I think they are one of the three favorites, along with Brazil and Argentina. They're unbeaten in, like, 13, 14 straight, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, given Suarez's injury, I don't think there's a hotter forward coming into this game into this tournament than Chicharito. Plus, look, guys, this is home field advantage for Mexico. They're going to have a 90-10 advantage in every stadium they play at in this tournament, and that matters. The one question is the same question that they've had for like 17 years, which Rafa Márquez is going to show up. If it's the, you know, smart and, you know, kind of controlled Rafa Márquez who they get in the group stage of the World Cup every time, they'll be really good. If it's the Rafa Márquez who chokes, frankly, in the round of 16 every time, then they're going to be in trouble.
It could be an issue for them, but they've got the talent. They've got the results. They've got the head coach, it seems, right now. Tom Marshall follows it all for ESPN FC. He is on the line now. Tom, what's up, man?
It's going good, Andrew. Yeah, just preparing to head over to Phoenix for the, you know, for Sunday's game against Uruguay, and, you know, obviously just can't wait for the Copa America to get underway now.
Travel is going to be a big part of your next month. It could be an even bigger part if some of these predictions are true. A lot of people saying Mexico, one of the favorites to get out of Group C. It's a strong group. Mexico, Uruguay, as you mentioned, Jamaica, and Venezuela. Venezuela, I think, clearly the bottom of this group. Most people put Mexico and Uruguay at the top, figured they would be the 1-2 to go by. What do you make of all these predictions that not only Mexico getting through, which I think we expected, but perhaps even being champions of this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Mexico got a very good chance. I mean, there's always that thing with Mexico that when things are looking really, really good, something tends to happen to kind of upset things a little bit. But no, I think on paper, you look at where Mexico are at right now, and I honestly believe that, you know, you've got this Juan Carlos Osorio's come in. You know, they've won the first 7 games under him. They've not even conceded a goal. I mean, things are looking really good. I think that you've got a really hardcore group at the in this Mexico squad, who are made up of players that are based in Europe, that are in the prime. And I think that, you know, they've got a level of professionalism and are desperate to achieve something with this national team. And I'm talking players like Andrés Guardado, Héctor Moreno, Héctor Herrera, Chicharito, and Miguel Layún. I think that is the leadership group in this Mexico team. And I think that, you know, that's the reason to be positive for Mexico, because they're all coming into this tournament in form.
The vibe, what's the feel down in Mexico? The energy from the fans, from the country, about what this tournament could mean for them?
I think the vibes, obviously, what's the reason Mexico can't win it? I mean, you know, I think that that's the you know, Mexico are desperate to do something at the Copa America and to do something on the world stage. I mean, this is a thing, actually, for me, with Mexican football, it's like Mexico are pretty much always a good team. But they fail to make that jump and be an elite side that really, you know, when you go up against a Germany or a Spain, I don't think those kind of teams are scared of Mexico. So I think this Copa America now is the opportunity for Mexico to, if they can get past an Argentina, beat a big side like Brazil or Chile and really make an impact and kind of send a message that, you know, 2 years out from Russia, you know, this Mexico team actually really means business. It can and is, you know, could be a dark horse going into the tournament in 2 years as well.
Now, Luis Suarez's status is a little bit up in the air, Tom, and people are still trying to figure that out, what the deal is going to be with him. But Chicharito's status is rock solid, and his form is downright incredible right now. A win last night over Chile, a big win for them, one that has people excited. Of course, Chicharito getting a goal, a nice header from him. Hey, you might want to mark this guy in the box. But what is he capable of in this tournament? Is this win he's going to make himself into, I know he's a world star, but one of the biggest stars in the world on this huge stage, this Copa America?
Yeah, no, he's in the form of his life. I mean, he scored yesterday on his birthday, 28 years old now. You know, he's now 3 goals from overtaking Jared Borghetti as Mexico's, you know, all-time top scorer. So everything that Chicharito does right now seems to just turn to gold. So, you know, I think he could be a big reason if Mexico have to do something in this tournament. I think Chicharito's goals can be a big part of that. I just think he's absolutely banging form. I don't think he's at the peak of his career right now. And, I think the interesting thing as well that we've seen with Chicharito is that going into this Copa America, he's the main man. And I know that might sound strange, but if you actually look back at the last 2 World Cups, Chicharito hasn't been the starter in either. As in, going into the tournament, he's always been fighting for his place. And I think what's happened now under Juan Carlos Osorio, obviously helped by his form with Bayer Leverkusen, is that, you know, Osorio said, Chicharito's my striker. He's, you know, he's done unbelievable things in Europe. He deserves this starting place, and I'm not moving him from there. And I think that Chicharito's benefited from being given that kind of backing by the coach as well. So, yeah, I think he's already a star, but, you know, you definitely back him to score a few goals in this Copa.
You talked about Osorio, and obviously the coaching situation in Mexico has been an interesting story over the last year. We know Miguel Herrera.
Over the last year? I mean, how many years?
Yeah. But we know Miguel Herrera, the 3-5-2, the famous system, the energy. Osorio is a guy who coached in MLS. A lot of fans familiar with him. It looked like a 4-3-3 last night against Chile. Tell us a little bit about that style that they're going to play with, and are there any question marks really going into the first game in the starting lineup?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite funny actually, because, you know, obviously following the Mexican press like I obviously do, and I think everybody's, you know, he took over, you know, kind of like last fall, and everybody's still trying to get to grips with him and what he's trying to do. I mean, you guys obviously in MLS know about his reputation for changing things around, for, you know, being a bit of a tinker man with his formation. So I think personally, I've stopped predicting starting 11s. I've stopped predicting formations that he's going to use, because he completely mixes it up. You know, I think we saw against Paraguay in Atlanta last Saturday, a kind of 3-4-3 diamond formation. And then, you know, last night a 4-3-3. You know, he's played, 7 matches now, and we've seen 4 different starting formations. So, you know, he's completely got the ability to kind of mix things up. But I think the real positive for Osorio is that the players the Mexican players have actually adapted really well to his changes and to what he's asking for, because obviously as a national team coach you don't get that time on the training ground. So I think he's been, and he said it on numerous occasions, he's been very happy with how receptive the Mexican players have been to his what he's demanding, which obviously, you know, when you're playing a 3-4-3, you know, Marcelo Bielsa style formation that most players won't know inside out, it is a positive to see them that they've picked up on it. But yeah, I just add as well, against Chile, I think that was the worst performance under the Osorio era. And really, Chile played really well, especially in the first half. And, you know, they could have been two goals up at halftime easily. But then again, Mexico played, you know, I'd say with only three or four regular starters. So, you know, that's the context of that game.
So they'll take on Uruguay to start. And this was a team that a lot of people looked at coming into this tournament as one of the favorites. Luis Suarez, his form as good as anybody's in the world, maybe even better than Chicharito at this point. He's not going to play in the group stages, it appears, with his hamstring injury. I have to imagine Osorio and everybody in the El Tri camp was doing backflips when they saw that injury. Looking at the three teams in the group here, Jamaica, Uruguay, and Venezuela, who do you think are the biggest challengers to Mexico as far as it goes to, A, you know, picking up a result, but also just advancing to the knockout stages?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Uruguay, I think we all know about Uruguay, but I think in the specific context of Uruguay against Mexico on Sunday in Phoenix, I think style-wise, Uruguay can pose have the kind of formation, the kind of style to cause massive problems for Mexico. I think if you look at the Mexican national team over the last few years, Mexico struggled against teams that kind of play like Uruguay do, really hard, almost physical game, you know, not giving them much space to move to allow the, you know, the more creative players to make passes and have at least a second or two on the ball. So I think that's the key game to the whole group, I think, because obviously if Mexico can get a win and they can top that group, because you assume that Mexico can get past Jamaica and Venezuela, then they go up against Argentina or Chile. And I think the whole key for Mexico especially and you know, Uruguay as well, assuming that those two are going to go through, like I think most people do, is avoiding Argentina in that quarterfinal. I mean, I think that's the importance of Sunday's game for Mexico and Uruguay. Who can top the group and you know, potentially avoid Argentina if everything goes to plan, which, you know, it sometimes it doesn't.
Now, Tom, Jamaica went to the Gold Cup final last year, and I argue that they're a dark horse because they were strong defensively. Andre Blake playing in MLS has been one of the best goalkeepers. But Uruguay's a team that doesn't score a lot. And without Suarez, if you could stay around with them, there's a chance to get a win against them, or they may struggle to get a win in another game against Mexico or Venezuela. What do you think the chances are that Jamaica makes a surprise in this group?
Obviously, last year in the Gold Cup, they were probably the team of the tournament by quite a distance. I think the counter-attacking style obviously causes problems, a bit like, you know, Leicester City. They've got Wes Brown, Wesley Morgan, sorry, the Leicester captain there as well. So, yeah, they'll fancy the chances. I think that, you know, from the Mexican point of view, I think that Osorio, tactically, this is what he brings to the team. I think he changes the formation depending on the opposition, and I don't think it's as easy to catch Mexico out these days under Osorio, because I think he's kind of one step ahead of a manager tactically like Miguel Herrera. But yeah, I mean, you back Uruguay against Jamaica. Having said that, you know, Jamaica have defeated Chile 2-1 the other day. So yeah, I don't know. I think Jamaica are going to give everybody a game, but you couldn't back them to kind of to get out of the group when you've got, you know, Uruguay and Mexico, who for me are two of the five favorites for the tournament.
And last quick question, you talked about the expectations for Mexico. A quarterfinal appearance and out, is that an underwhelming performance from them? If they're not even in a semifinal or a final, is Osorio in trouble coming out of this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointment. If Mexico only reached the quarterfinal, it would be seen as a failure in Mexico. I think that Osorio, obviously, his job wouldn't be under threat, but, you know, you never know. I remember finishing up the Gold Cup last year in Philadelphia with, you know, Mexico winning the cup and everybody's happy, and then waking up the next day and next thing Miguel Herrera punched a TV reporter and he's on his way out. So you never quite know in Mexico, but yeah, I think that, you know, a semi-final would be a decent result, but obviously there's a lot of expectation here that, you know, that Mexico can reach a final. But really, for me, I don't think, apart from Argentina, I think Mexico can go into any other game in this tournament and on equal footing. I mean, I don't think I'd put them at least level with even a Brazil or Uruguay going into a game. Obviously, playing in the US, where Mexico have got a lot of fans, and they're going to be the home team in pretty much every game they play in this tournament. So, you know, the question from Mexico's point of view is, why not? Why can't they reach a final?
There you have it. Why not? Why not Mexico as champions lifting a cup later on this year in New York? Tom Marshall at Mexico World Cup on Twitter. Tom, you've got one of the most entertaining gigs in soccer in North America. Everybody should follow this guy. Enjoy the tournament. Enjoy your drive today. Stay safe, man.
No, yeah, thanks a lot, Andrew, and yeah, thanks for having me on, and yeah, we'll speak soon.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Alejandro Bedoya from the U.S. National Team, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, Matt Doyle coming right up. Cristel Valencia. We are going to groups B and D. We covered A and C already, of course. B, Brazil, Ecuador, Haiti, Peru, a good group, but one a little bit weak in the star power section just because of Neymar's absence from the Brazil team. On the ground in LA is our very own Cristel Valencia, KValencia27 on Twitter. She'll be covering this whole tournament for footballmls.com. Cristel, how is LA? How are you doing?
LA is good. Hello, Andrew. Hello, David. Let me start by saying that this is my first time ever on Extra Time Radio in my 6 years at MLS Digital.
Oh,
this
my
is a huge
gosh.
Day.
I deserve a round of applause.
I think you definitely do.
Give me that.
And I think we also deserve some demerits because obviously we're not doing our jobs the right way.
This is the ultimate fusion show. It's Football MLS and ETR put together.
Yeah, this is good stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. So
This is awesome.
So you are okay. A resident expert on Ecuador, however you want to say it. They are one of the powers in this group. Brazil and Ecuador appear to be the two that just about everybody is sending through. But we'll start with Brazil before getting to your boys. It doesn't appear, or at least from outside appearances, that this team is one of the favorites in the tournament, at least not maybe in the top four or five. Why is that? Do you agree? What kind of squad have we seen from Brazil?
I totally agree. I believe that Brazil, without Neymar and Douglas Costa, especially Neymar, loses a lot of potential. And yes, we know that history is a factor. And the last Copa America that Brazil won was under Dunga. But I don't see this team doing well in this tournament. It will definitely make it to the next round. But after this, who knows? Look at the roster. They had made 5 changes to injury, and your star player or leader is a defender. This guy, Miranda from Inter Milan. And yes, you have players like Luis Gustavo, Felipe Luis, Coutinho, which is another player that is good and I think is a star of the team. But I still believe that Brazil lacks a lot of potential without its big star, which is Neymar, and he's not part of the team. So that will be a problem for them. We spoke to Julio Baptista a couple of weeks ago, and he said that actually not having Neymar is a good thing for the Brazilian national team because they will come together as a group, and because they have a lot of history, they will bring this together and push it as further as they can. But to be honest with you, I don't see it. They will make it to the next round for sure. I don't know if they will win the group, but other than that, I don't see Brazil in the semifinals or even in the final.
The opening matchup, and I think the group favorites, Ecuador versus Brazil. How do you see them, the two squads that are coming to this tournament, how do you see them matching up head-to-head?
Well, I think, especially talking about Ecuador, I think everyone at this point is not convinced that this team can put a great performance in this Copa America after seeing a poor presentation versus the U.S. last week. But we have to remember two things. Most of these players, I'm talking about Ecuador, had just finished playing for their clubs. So fatigue was a real factor in the game. And the two main leaders with the national team, Antonio Valencia and Walter Ayoví, were not part of this game. Far from saying that Ecuador relies on those players, when the leaders are around, the dynamic of the team changes definitely. So that said, I do believe that Ecuador will put on a good performance in Copa America. Let's remember that this team is still leading the World Cup qualifiers in South America along with Uruguay. I believe that Ecuador's strengths are on the wingers, on the sides, with fast midfielders like Antonio Valencia and Jefferson Montero. And we are hoping for forwards like Ener Valencia and Miller Bolaños to be back on their great 11 that they showed last year when the qualifiers started. So this is going to be a big matchup. It's going to be a big test for both teams. So I believe that the winner will have the better chance to make it to the next round, because you got to remember that Peru starts with Haiti. And to be honest with you, I don't have any expectations about Haiti at all. I think this team will be trash in this tournament. This is the weakest team in this competition. So Peru has a good chance, at least in this opening game, to see if they can make it to the next round.
And this is a Peru team that has had success in past years, but there isn't a lot of expectations for them for this tournament. Why is that?
I believe it is because this roster is completely different from the team that we have seen in the World Cup qualifiers. Only 6 players that are currently playing the qualifiers made it to this roster for Copa America. There are many new faces, which make me think that Coach Gareca is in a transitional mode. There is a lot of renovation in this team. And I believe that rather than coming to Copa America to compete, he's trying to prepare these young players for the World Cup qualifiers, because ultimately that's the goal for any coach to make sure that the team goes to the World Cup. So, but you never know, because you have to remember that in the last 2 editions, Peru made it to the 3rd place. So there's history behind them as well. So Peru for Brazil and for Ecuador will be tough. But I see Ecuador going to the next round and Brazil because of the history, what they represent in any tournament in the world. I think they'll make it to the next round as well.
Now, these two groups, A and B, are two that are going to match up in these quarterfinal sections, and that's important for U.S. teams. If you're a U.S. fan, who would you want to see, assuming that the U.S. get through and something good happens? Well, that's a big assumption, I know. It's a tough group in Group A. But what's the tougher matchup? Are you going to get behind your guys, Ecuador, or is it Brazil? Who wins the group? Who's second? What matchup might we see?
Well, okay, my predictions are that Brazil will win the group, and Ecuador will qualify in 2nd place, and the matchup in the quarterfinals will be Colombia against Ecuador and U.S. Brazil. So Ooh. It's going to be tough for the U.S.
Chris Valencia on the ground in L.A. right now for Football MLS at KValencia27 if you want to follow her on Twitter. She is the expert on this stuff. We are going to make sure we also get her back on this show a number of times during the tournament. Christelle, go have fun. Keep cranking out the coverage. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much. Hey, guys, but I didn't hear your predictions. What do you guys think?
Oh, man. I think I'm going to flip it up on you. I'm going to flip it up. I'm going Ecuador numero uno.
No, that's what I was going to say.
We got more faith in your guys than you do.
Yeah, I'm saying Ecuador wins the group.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah, thank you, guys.
Going bold with it. Thank you, Christelle.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
Man, we got to get Christelle on this show more often. Bringing the energy. You know who else brings the energy? The big man, Dave Martinez. Empire of Soccer is probably how you know him. EOS Radio is starting up right now. You should check that out as well. He is Argentine, which I didn't know, which means he is perfect to help us preview Group D. Dave, he's on the line now. Dave, what's up, man?
I like the introduction, big man. It makes me sound like a wrestler.
You have a little bit of that. When I see you, sometimes you're dressed in all black, too. So you got to, I'm not going to say you're Undertaker, but you've got kind of
pretty
that.
Close.
You got kind of that vibe, man. You got something special about you. And this group has got something special about it, but we're not sure if the special ingredient is going to be there. That's Lionel Messi. He's got, quote-unquote, what is it, back discomfort? I mean, Dave and I have back discomfort. What does this mean? Will he play in this tournament?
I have back discomfort, and I'll be writing throughout the entire tournament, so there's no excuse. Listen, with Messi, this is one of those milestone moments in his career. Argentina haven't won a major title since 1993. Meanwhile, Lionel Messi's being heralded as the greatest soccer player that ever lived. There is a disconnect there. It's as Pelé would argue consistently, you can't be considered one of the best in the world if you haven't won at the national level. And I think Messi knows that as well. He's going to be 31 years old. Just a few days before the final, he's getting to that age where he has to begin to rack up the titles and begin to make his mark in Argentina. That's what this tournament, I think, is really about, is how well Messi will produce. So a little back pain, I don't see him being left off for that now.
They've lost the last two finals of major tournaments, the World Cup, of course, and then in Chile to Chile. What's the thought around Argentina, whether it's media, fans, or the team, about what the disconnect has been, the inability to just get over that hump?
Well, Argentinians are such a proud people. They're all about their country. They're proud about their culture, their heritage. And that's why they latched on to a person as imperfect as Diego Maradona, right? Maradona puts the team on his back, wins titles, won a World Cup. And despite all the issues he had off the field, that is their idol. That is the person they love because he bled the colors. You know, with Messi, he plays very well with Barcelona. He's outstanding on the club side. He's won every trophy you could possibly imagine. But on the national level, he hasn't shown that, and Argentines tend to be very emotional. So they look at that lack of victory, that lack of trophies, and there is a disconnect. They seem to believe that he doesn't bleed the colors like a Maradona will. So again, it goes back to legacy, right? It goes back to Messi's legacy. Is he really one of the greatest players in the world? For the rest of the world, yes, but in his own home country, there is doubt until he wins that trophy.
Of course, it's not just Messi, though, Dave. There's a good team here to be made wearing white and light blue.
Ridiculous.
They're the favorites in this group, right? In Group D, Argentina, even if Messi, you know, is whatever, hobbling around with his holding on to his back, they still have to be the favorites, don't they? Or does Chile have a shout there?
Listen, Chile always has a shot. They're a fantastic team. They have a great spine, top to bottom. You know, starting with Bravo, ending with Alexis Sanchez. I mean, they're a great, great team. But Argentina, I mean, the wealth, especially on offense, is unbelievable. Their weakest link is probably Higuain, who will be their main starter, their starting forward. And he is still one of the greatest strikers in the world. So when you're looking at a club that boasts not only Messi, but Di Maria, Higuain, Agüero, Lavezzi, I mean, to go on, it's an embarrassment of riches. It's just a matter of Martino finding the right combination for Argentina to move forward and to make the most out of each one of those players. And that's where I think Argentina has stumbled in the past years. The defense is still a little suspect with Argentina. Just like when they went into the 2014 World Cup, people didn't necessarily believe they'd be able to hold it together, but they did. I can imagine that they would be able to put up a good performance on defense. They have the firepower to really take it to any team. And the only other team in their group that could really contest them is Chile, and that's their first match of the tournament. So all the drama will be gone after that, and both teams will be able to comfortably move forward against Bolivia and Panama.
Now the question, though, is that game. You start out with that matchup. Most likely the second-place team in this group is going to move on and play Mexico in the quarterfinals, who's the third favorite, I think a lot of people are saying, in the tournament. Is all the pressure on that first game? I mean, is it, if you lose that game, are you behind the eight ball just from the start?
I think it's, you could say it's, there's a lot of pressure in that first game. It'll be tentative in the first 45 minutes. They'll be feeling each other out, trying to figure out how they're going to approach the match. But again, it's the first match of the tournament. It's really, the pressure isn't quite there until you know where your basis is. So if both teams start off with a draw, then they're comfortably going to go ahead against Bolivia and Panama. Now, I don't mean to insult Bolivia and Panama. Panama in particular, they have some great players, some players that are familiar in the MLS circles, Blas Perez, Baloy, Godoy. They have Jaime Pinedo was with the LA Galaxy for a while. I mean, these are players that are fairly outstanding on the club level. They have caused fits for teams in the past. Panama tortured Mexico a couple of years ago, right? So they're respectable teams. But if they start off, if Chile and Argentina start off with a draw, I think both teams will be happy with that. If either one of them comes out with a win, they will be forced into that second place. The second team, the losing team, will be forced into a tough situation. Nobody wants to face Mexico in this tournament, period. They're doing very, very well. They proved it against Chile last night. They're a tough team to beat. They are one of the favorites. And again, if you're talking about home field advantage, who has it more than Mexico? The U.S.? That's arguable.
Last question for you here. Bolivia, we saw them against the U.S. Our opinion on this show is that Bolivia just aren't good. We were talking before we talked to you. What's the over-under on goals they allow in this tournament? I'm putting it at about 10.
I think it's at 14.
What are you putting this as? I mean, this could be a really, really tough tournament for Bolivia.
It can be very tough. Over-under, I put it at 12. I heard somebody say 14 there, but right. I'll put it at 12. Look, Bolivia's, I mean, they're just going to be outclassed here. There's no question about it. The only person I'm really interested in seeing in Bolivia is Yasmani Duke because he plays in the U.S. Other than that, there's really not much going on, and they are the minnow in this group. They're not even the type of underdog that you can say can pull out a victory. Bolivia has consistently been bad over the past few years. There really is no form to their match, the tactics, their players. I just don't see them pulling out anything here. So over under, I'd say over 12.
Oh boy, over.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly.
Tough. CONCACAF fans hoping that Panama can make some noise in this group. You can follow along. I'm sure Dave and the folks at Empire Soccer will be killing this thing on Twitter and wherever else. At Empire Soccer on Twitter, EOS Radio. If you want to listen to him, Dave, we appreciate it, man. Get back to jumping off the ropes, doing whatever you do on this fine Thursday.
And that's what I'll be doing. So in honor of Ric Flair, can I give a woo?
Oh, woo! Yeah, we'll see you later, man.
Later, boys. Take care.
All right, guys. We've gone over all the groups. We've got our expert opinions in here. Let's bring our opinions in. Not saying you're not experts.
I don't think I am.
Okay. So I'm going to start with the U.S. Where is the tournament in with the U.S.? When is this over for them with lifting a title? Where's it at? What do you think, Doyle?
I think we win the group. Which means that
really?
We end up. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
I am on this hype train right now. I just believe in the talent in this group, and if we play that 4-3-3, and you know Bradley is the D mid and a consistent center back pairing, I really think we can do this. And then in the quarterfinals we meet and beat Ecuador. Sorry, Cristel. And then we get ended in the semifinals against Argentina, because I think Argentina will win Group D and kind of cruise through their quarterfinals. And I think this is the tournament for Messi. I think this is when he gets it done. Yep,
I agree with that. I have them going on the quarters to Ecuador, because I have Ecuador winning Group B over Brazil.
So, you traitor.
I know. String me up. Do whatever you got to do to me. You with me? Quarterfinals out? No?
No, I say semifinal. Oh, I think Brazil wins the group as well. I think they beat Brazil in Giant Stadium in in the quarterfinals.
Fire. All right.
Wait. You just picked the U.S. to beat Brazil in a knockout round game?
I absolutely 100% just did that.
Boom. You guys are whatever Kool-Aid you've got, hook me up. I need a pouch of that stuff.
If you think they're going to get out of the group, you might as well
Is this Messi's tournament? He's going to get over his old man back and win this thing? Argentina?
I really think so. And look, he might not play much in the group stage, but I don't think that matters all that much, because Panama and Bolivia aren't that great. And I don't think Chile outside of Chile is going to be a match for Argentina. And then I think once he gets into the knockout rounds, a little bit rested and healthy, I think this is
not as taxed, maybe not quite as.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Less taxed. And I think that like this he knows he needs this for his legacy. He knows he needs a World Cup or a Copa America, and this might be his best chance.
I think Chile gives them trouble. Chile high presses. And I think the center backs for Argentina are going to struggle to get the ball off their feet. They're going to get an opportunity or two through that. I think Chile and Argentina, it's going to be tough, because whoever gets second place in their group faces Mexico in a quarterfinal.
Yeah.
And I think Mexico will win that matchup. So I'm picking Argentina over Mexico in the final.
My final, Argentina over Mexico. Mexico beat Chile, then they beat Ecuador, and then they lose to Argentina.
Yeah.
Colombia in the third place game. Look, it's going to be a lot of fun, and it starts on Friday, the U.S. and Colombia, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, out there in Santa Clara, out there in Northern California. We've got boots on the ground at MLSsoccer.com, video, check it out in the app, all the written content that you're accustomed to, Doyle's thoughts, of course, we always want those, so check those out, MLSsoccer.com. In the meantime, enjoy it. That's what this is all about. We'll be back on Monday.